Hello, and welcome to the Yearly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page Podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall.
In this episode, we'll be spotlighting the best and brightest comics of the year, as well as discussing what we felt were some of the major missteps. As with our weekly comic spotlight, we'll be using DC, Marvel, and other publishers as our major categories.
We'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Yearly Comics Spotlight number 6 for comics originally released during 2012. Now, 2012, I thought, was a really interesting year, because we kind of started it off with lackluster sales in a number of areas, specifically Marvel. DC was still doing pretty well with Batman and Justice League and stuff. We got the Marvel Now mid-year. We got Valiant relaunching. Had a couple other big events here and there. Obviously not as radical of a change as the New 52 that happened during 2011. I totaled up how many comics I've gotten. Now, I'm not including the last shipment of the year. As we record this, that's still sitting at my UPS box, so I don't have those, haven't read those. But I bought somewhere around 2,233 comics, plus the 8 or so in that other shipment. During 2012. And that, I just went through my DCBS list, so.
Wow.
Anything I picked up at stores, back issues, conventions, that kind of a deal is not included there. And just for fun, I wanted to see kind of how this split across, the publishers. It was almost a dead heat, between Marvel and DC. I got around 811 from DC, 805 from Marvel, each of which is a little over, 36%. But that leaves about 617 that I got from other publishers, which is about 27%, 27.6, a little over, actually. Out of those 617, 188 from Image, 89 from Dynamite, 73 from IDW. So, you know, it's funny because I consider myself very much a mainstream comic book reader, but I am willing to bet a lot of people who are kind of on the hardcore, you know, independent side or whatever, may not have gotten 617 comics over the course of the year. Maybe they have. I'm sure there are plenty of readers who did. But I don't know. I just find that kind of interesting. But it's, you know, not quite even thirds. Definitely more in favor of Marvel and DC. But I don't know. I found that interesting.
That's a lot of comics.
Yes. Yes, it is. So, shall we start with DC?
Sure.
Now, before we get into the categories we've got that we put up on the web, on the forum and stuff, with the writing, the art, the character slash team, and the storyline slash title, there's, with the New 52, I don't know about you, but I still haven't really adopted these versions of the characters as the quote-unquote real thing just yet. It's starting to get there, but for the most part, it's, I don't know, it may take me another year or two to kind of warm up, get used to these, and have enough distance from the pre-Flashpoint versions. But when I was going through on the DC side, it was surprisingly easy, perhaps too easy, for me to kind of pick the categories here. I read 2,200 plus comics over the year, so I am certain I have probably forgotten about a few things that you said, oh, I'm surprised you didn't pick this. I may say, oh, damn, you're right, I should have, you know, whatever. So I'm just going to say that from the outset. For writing for DC, what was kind of your favorite thing?
Well, I kind of went outside of DC, and I gave the nod to Jeff Lemire for Sweet Tooth, which almost ended in this year. I think there's one issue still that hasn't come out. But, you know, he's wrapping that series up. He's been doing it for a really long time, and it's one of my favorite series that has come out. And I think the fact that I gave it to Jeff Lemire for Sweet Tooth, mostly, even though he's now reading.
He's reading quite a bit, but he's
reading
stuff too.
But he's writing stuff in the main DCU. But, you know, for me in 2012, the writing at DC just did not stand out for me this year. I mean, a lot of people, it's like Scott Snyder, you know, they give him a lot of nods for Batman. I like Scott Snyder a lot. I like Batman, but, you know, there were some story arcs in Batman that I thought were okay. I mean, I don't think Batman's just not like the top. It's better than it's been in a long time, but for me, it's not like the best thing that I'm reading.
I can see that.
And Sweet Tooth, I love that book. I'm going to miss it when it's gone, but you know, I appreciate the fact that he's telling a complete story with it. So I just wanted to give that my nod for best writing. How about you?
At this point, I'm still reading all of the New 52, all the associated stuff, a couple other things from DC and stuff. But there's one book that just every issue has really been, you know, highly enjoyable. And the exception to the I haven't really adopted these versions of the characters. There's one book. It's like, yeah, these are comfortable versions of the character. I'm just loving. I got to give it to Paul Levitz for World's Finest. I think he's doing really good stuff on Legion, but really his work on World's Finest is just really clicking with me.
He would have been my second choice if I didn't go with Sweet Tooth, but I kind of didn't want to give an almost complete sweep to World's Finest. We'll see as we go into some of the other categories. World's Finest is a really well done series.
Yeah. Well, I think in the writing category, DC's kind of undercut some of the creative teams by having swapped a few on too many titles. I mean, there's one or two books like Green Arrow that they're already on, I think, the third or fourth creative teams.
The other thing I think DC is making, I don't want to like stand in the way of growth for anybody, but DC is letting a lot of people who are traditionally artists write series. And I read them and I'm like, this artist is not, in my opinion, writing the greatest stories I've ever read. They're kind of a mediocre writer. And, you know, there's been a lot of artists in the past that have made that jump to writing. But, you know, Tony Daniel, several others that are not popping in my mind, or J.H. Williams, you know, writing on Batwoman is weak at best. I mean, when he draws that book, it's great. But writing, I'm not so sure.
I think if you're going to take an artist and kind of let them do the writing chores, you need to pair them with the right kind of editor. And the two names that pop to mind in light of kind of a DC conversation here are Mark Waid and Marv Wolfman, both of whom are incredibly talented as editors, also very talented as writers. But more importantly, when they're in the editor position, that's what they do. They edit, they coach, they don't rewrite. And I think somebody like that who's really got the writing chops, who's gotten the proven track record, knows how to do it, can guide somebody who can do the art side of the storytelling and shore up the writing weaknesses. And I think if you're going to take somebody like J.H. Williams, phenomenal artist and stuff, and let them kind of have free rein on the writing, you're doing everybody, including them, a disservice to not really provide the coaching and the support structure to make them as successful as possible. So I can see where you're coming from on that. So on the art area,
well, just as far on the writing, just some of the people that the listeners picked on the forum, there was a bunch of Brian Azzarello for Wonder Woman, a lot of Scott Snyder for Batman, and we had Darwin Cook, who's doing Minutemen over in the Before Watchmen. All good choices. I mean, those are all examples of very good writing. And you know, like I said, you know, Paul Levitz, I think he's doing a great job on World's Finest. But, you know, it's not that DC doesn't have good writing. It's just that it's not what it's standing out for me. Now, on the art side, I went with Kevin Maguire on World's Finest. And also in 2012, he finished up Tonga in My Greatest Adventure. And I love Kevin Maguire's art. I think he's, you know, kind of a master of the facial expression. You know, it's like him and Amanda Connor are kind of like the king and queen of doing that kind of stuff. And he's half of what makes World's Finest such a great book. But I really liked him, and I gave my art nod to Maguire this year.
I can totally understand that. I went with the George Perez, Kevin Maguire team on World's Finest. I think they are working incredibly well together on that book with the different, you know, timelines and stuff. They've got different styles and strengths and stuff, but it's never like I flip the page thinking, what the heck just happened or whatever. And I'm just really enjoying both the present day action and adventures and stuff in that book and the 5 years back and how did they get to this point, kind of build up. It's one of the few we're kind of doing that dual storytelling technique is really working for me.
I tried to boil it down to the one, but I can go and be the same exact place as you. I mean, Perez and Maguire are doing a phenomenal job together on that book.
I got to say, if I had to pick just the one, as much as I think Kevin Maguire is just a great guy and a phenomenal artist, I would have to go with Perez. There's something about Perez's art I've just always loved and enjoyed. Same with Maguire's. But there's the hyper attention to the detail, the tight penciling. You know, there's, to me, you know, both of these guys are at the pinnacle of their skills. They just have angled off in somewhat different directions. And I'd be happy with the book being done by either one of them. But man, if I had to pick, Perez is just a long-term favorite for me. I'm glad I don't have to pick and I can go with the two of them. So, what did the people on the forum have to say?
We had Greg Capullo, Batman, a lot. I can see that. He's a great artist. Kenneth Rocafort, doing a great job. I love his art. We got some, and then there, you know, it goes over into Before Watchmen, which, you know, has so many great creators, you know, Amanda Connor, Jay Lee, Darwin Cook. You know, there's a lot of great art going on over there, and I can't argue with any of that. What surprised me is no J.H. Williams. I think it's because he's done less visible Batwoman near the end of the year. It's probably not as much on people's minds. You know, yeah. Last year I think he was getting a lot more attention.
Well, and in fairness, the thread only went up a couple of days ago. Yeah. And if the thread had been up all year, I think we would have had people that would have put him up earlier in the year and maybe not have revised since then. So I do think the writing he's doing on the issues he's not drawing on Batwoman, though, is having people kind of rethink him entirely and unfairly on the art side, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Now, on character, who's your fave on characters?
You know, this was one of the ones that was hardest for me to do. And, you know, I went with character slash team in almost a broader sense. I went with Earth 2 because I'm really enjoying kind of the discovery aspect of learning about this new version of the Earth 2 characters and their world, their status quo, and kind of the blank slate with a familiar template. And what I'm liking about it is it's all contained in the one book. It's radically different versions than the classic Earth 2 stuff. And, you know, I love the old Earth 2 characters, but, you know, they're not claiming it is the old Earth 2, I guess, is part of it. And it's not like I've got to choose this as my only reality for DC, if you will. Which is, I think, part of the problem having some of the new 52 versions is they have supplanted the ones I had really grown comfortable with on the monthly basis. And I think some of what they're doing here is just really fun, and got a lot of good potential. And I didn't want to give everything to World's Finest. But certainly Huntress was right up there on the short list of what I was going to put here.
So I went with the Green Lantern Corps. Just, you know, that includes Hal and Guy and John Stewart and Kilowog and the whole crew. Just all the Green Lantern Corps stuff. That family of titles, with the exception of Red Lanterns, which I tend to not read, although I'm started picking it up for the Rise of the Third Army storyline. But the other three titles, they're going along quite nicely. I look forward to reading those every month. And, you know, it's well done. I love the Green Lantern Corps.
Just on a quick aside there, you read the latest issue of, I think it was New Guardians. Was it New Guardians? Which was the one where they gave the name of the first Lantern?
I do not remember, but I have not read the one from this last week yet.
Ah, it was either Green Lantern or New Guardians that came out this past week. They reveal the name of the first Lantern, and I thought the choice of the name was very interesting.
I haven't read that one yet.
We'll wait till
I'll have to get to it.
Read that. Know. We'll talk about it on the weekly comic spotlight for the last week of the year.
Okay. Others, people on the forum, we had some Hal Jordan and Sinestro and Green Lantern type of stuff going on there. A lot of Batman, which is not surprising. Batman is really a popular character. He's right now I would say, got to be the overall top seller for DC. Then we got some Aquaman in there, which is good. Seeing Aquaman get a little bit of love, and some Demon Knights, which is a great series as well.
It's going to be interesting to see how fans of Demon Knights react to the 30 years later aspect that they're about to do. See if that jazzes them up or really turns them off. So, storyline title.
World's Finest. Had to be World's Finest.
Yeah, I got to get behind you on that one. That's definitely my favorite title at DC. Again, as I've mentioned before, the writing's phenomenal. The art's phenomenal. You know, these are the closest to kind of the classic version of the characters that I think DC's doing almost on any of their books. And that works for me. How about the forum? What'd people say?
We had a couple of Batmans. We had some Wonder Womans, another World's Finest. More than one person went with Minutemen from Before Watchmen.
I can see that. I think that's been one of the strongest out of the Before Watchmen stuff.
And we got an OMAC. Kind of holding on to that OMAC. There's some people who love that OMAC.
Only a few issues came out at the beginning of the year, so that's a little surprising. But
last chance to get in their OMAC love, lest they bring him back into a series.
Now, I went through the Weekly Comic Spotlight stuff for the year, picked out my 5 out of 5s for DC, and there were only 3. Batman 12, DC Universe Presents number 9, and, of course, World's Finest number 1. Now, obviously, we're only doing one DC book a week, so, I mean, there are other books I probably would have given 5 out of 5s to. I did not think to pull yours out of that list. You also gave one to Batman 12, Before Watchmen, Dr. Manhattan. So, Blue Beetle 14, Sword of Sorcery number 0, Before Watchmen, Dr. Manhattan, number 1, Batman 12, Justice League Dark 10, New Deadwardians number 1, are the ones you gave 5 out of 5s to this year.
So what about Marvel?
I had a really hard time with Marvel this time around. Frankly, I found it to be a little bit of a lackluster year for Marvel. I mean, they're doing a lot of good stuff, but little in that utterly amazing category. A little that just stood out saying, wow, this was just great. You've got to talk about this in the yearly wrap-up. For me, Marvel now is just kind of Marvel not all that different for me. And it's kind of hard for me to get behind the relaunch, the quasi-rebranding or whatever, the way I was able to kind of support what DC tried to do with the new 50, tried and succeeded doing with the new 52. I think they really re-energized their fan base. I haven't gotten that feeling from Marvel. So, there are a couple here where, you know, I'm certainly, you know, we're easy picks or whatever, one or two. It's like, I'll go with this. And again, Marvel's not doing bad stuff, but so much of it is just kind of good, better than average, but not amazing. But few things really hit that mark for me. Starting off with writing, I had to go with Greg Rucka on Punisher. He has done just an outstanding job on this character and taken a character that could really just be boiled down to he's got guns, he shoots people, and putting character into him. You know, I'm not going to say I'm the world's largest Punisher fan by any stretch of the imagination, but I don't despise the character either. This is one of the few runs that I've read where I felt I really got to know the character. And I've read a lot of Punisher stuff before. Certainly not the Max stuff, but the Marvel Universe stuff. And I mean, Greg Rucka is just an amazingly talented writer. He's done a lot of runs on a lot of books that I consider to be just, you know, must reads. His run on Wonder Woman being one of them. You know, he can get to the core of a character, stay true to the character, and reveal new things and do a new take on the character all at the same time, which is a pretty neat trick. How about you?
I went with Mark Waid. You know, Mark Waid is a great writer. He's taken Daredevil and revitalized Daredevil, you know, especially after Daredevil was at the top of a lot of people's lists for a long time with Bendis. And, you know, then he went through kind of a little dark phase there with Shadowland and some of these other things that were less than great. And, you know, he's brought this character back, and it's so many people are holding up Daredevil as, you know, one of the best books at Marvel. And, you know, I just appreciate the fact that, you know, his writing has turned a lot of people on to this character, and you know, just in general, got them looking at in a very favorable light a character who's not one of like the big three or four at Marvel, and just putting that light on. I also love his. I've only two issues in, but Indestructible Hulk. I thought I hadn't been, again, reading Hulk for a long time. The last time I really enjoyed the Hulk was probably Planet Hulk, which was some time ago. And, his take so far is going really good, although it's a little early on in that.
I'm liking what he's doing on Indestructible Hulk. It's just not jiving with what I'm reading in, a number of other books right now. And I don't blame Wade on any of that. I think Marvel Editorial is kind of lost control of their universe, which is,
and get some of the guys from Aspen over there.
Yeah. Again, what Aspen's doing right now with the executive assistant stuff and the cross continuity there, granted it's two books versus, 20 billion, but they're at least making the effort, and at times I don't even think Marvel's doing that.
So on the forum there were a bunch of people who went Mark Wade. And then we also got Christos Gage and Jonathan Hickman thrown in. I was toying with Hickman until I read The Avengers. His FF and Fantastic Four was great, but then he kind of turned a corner for me with Avengers. And, it's kind of like when I didn't pick Geoff Johns in a previous year because he had done some stuff that, I can't make some of my favorite of the year if they've done stuff that I just absolutely don't like. So,
fair enough.
But, Hickman's a good writer. Christos Gage, he's doing good stuff too. And I think, a lot of the stuff is they've restarted so many books and they're restarting so many books that, it's too close to the end of the year to really get a good feel for a lot of the stuff on where it's going on writing. I think art you can kind of look at and, kind of like right away say, okay, this is good. I like this art or not. And on writing, you kind of have to give it a little bit of breathing space, So Marvel next year will be a very interesting year for them because they're going to have the Marvel Now going well, hopefully, for the whole year. They're not going to, turn some corner and do some other giant reboot or, something, partway through the year. So it'll be good to see if they get a whole year of this new direction under their belt and what we see with that.
Would be good. Would be surprising. I think they're going to, halfway through the year, do some other kind of marketing shenanigans. But we'll see.
On the art side, I went with Asad Ribic on Thor. I love his art, but there are some, and Marvel does have a lot of great art going out. So it's kind of hard to, for me anyway, I see a lot of different artists and a lot of the art is really great there. They do have a knack for being able to acquire really substantial talent. So it's interesting because there's so many different artists that could be in that top slot. It's kind of like, which one am I going to pick?
I had a really hard time with this category. In past years, there's usually been one or two that just, how could I not pick this person sort of a deal. This time I had to actually go kind of search around a little bit, which of course gives them unfair bias to more recent comics. Fortunately, this last shipment week I got was huge, so I had a lot to pick from. I'm going to go with David Marquez for Ultimate Spider-Man. It's a nice, clean style. He's doing good stuff with the story flow, page layouts, the characterizations, the action sequences. He's got a bit of a quasi-photorealistic aspect to it, and some of that's probably the coloring as well. It reminds me of Greg Land, but without the "this has been cut out of the magazine and is lifeless" aspect to it, if you know what I mean. In other words, it wouldn't surprise me if Marquez is using photo for reference, but he's certainly not tracing over it. And I think he's doing just some phenomenal stuff. I'm always enjoying the art in that book. So that's what I went with.
Very good. We had nods to Steve Epting, Tom Fowler, Butch Geis, David Aja, Kev Walker, And it goes on. There was not any two people picked the same favorite artist.
Interesting. I can understand that. Art's incredibly subjective tastes, but in some years there have been a few that are almost landslide winners.
Yeah. It's just, you know, all over the place on that. But that's good. You know, it just means that there's a lot of different things to choose from and a lot of things to love. So I got that going on. What about character for you?
Character team was another hard one, and they've just done so much this year in terms of the double shipping, the storylines and stuff like that, that I had to kind of go with one that I thought, not so much for any specific storyline or title, but the one that I think just has really gelled under its creative team or whatever, and that's the Fantastic Four. I think Hickman's run has been a definitive run, a kind of a landmark run in many respects. I know some people haven't cared for the handoff to the new creative team. I felt it was similar enough in style and not trying to discount everything that Hickman has done that I was, you know, sufficiently pleased with that handoff. We'll see where the new creative team takes it. And part of it is it's hard for me to really vote for any of the new books, teams, be it creative teams or character teams, for the Marvel Now stuff because we only have a handful of issues for them. So, you know, Fantastic Four, this was another one that was a kind of a hard one to pick. But I think that team has been consistent throughout the year, has stayed true to itself, whereas a lot of the other teams, the Avengers we have now versus the ones we had at the beginning of the year, bear a little resemblance at times. Same with the X-Men and some of the other books. So that's what I went with. You?
I went with Daredevil. And the reason I went with Daredevil is because he has not been affected by Marvel Now, so I have loved that book consistently through the whole year. I just had a hard time with, you know, the Marvel Now thing to some extent in that, you know, I either liked the book before Marvel Now, but then I didn't like it after Marvel Now, which is the case of the FF, or I didn't care for it before, and then after it was, you know, better. You know, it's just like they kind of changed up on us there partway through the year. But Daredevil has been consistent for me across the year. You know, that character, I've liked that that Wade's take on it all the way through the year.
That seems to almost unfairly bias towards characters that have the same creative team throughout the year. And I can understand why that would be. I don't mean unfair in your respect, but almost like the publishers could be unintentionally sabotaging characters with the rotating creative teams.
Well, I mean, to me, it's just like when I look at like favorite character, I mean, in like almost I kind of like really stick on Spider-Man for a long time. Spider-Man's been my favorite character for many, many years. But this last story arc of Spider-Man, I didn't care for. And it just turned it in a bad direction for me. And it knocked Spidey out of the top slot for me.
No, and I can understand
a lot of people
that.
Like that, but you know, it's like for me, it's like, well, you know, I like a lot of the Marvel characters, but it's how is that character being handled by its in kind of in general? If I kind of step back and philosophically, who is my favorite Marvel character? Well, it's always going to be Spider-Man, but it's like in any given year, how is Spider-Man actually being handled in the book?
You know? Yeah. Well, and that goes almost down to the radioactivity aspect of characters at times. A really bad or ill-chosen or ill-received storyline can really, you know, make a character toxic for a little bit. And I think some of what they're doing right now at the end of the year here with Spider-Man certainly has that potential, and it may take a little bit for that to wear off. So I can see that. And again, I can understand particularly under Wade's tenure with Daredevil, he's been doing some really good stuff with that character. You know, and again, that also includes the Omega Effect crossover that with Spider-Man and Punisher. That was this year, right? Yeah.
Yes.
That's what got me back on Punisher, actually.
And Daredevil was in there, too.
Well, that's what I said. Daredevil included the...
Those are three good characters.
Yeah.
I like that.
What do people in the forum have to say?
We've got Fantastic Four and Future Foundation, you know, kind of mixed in. We've got the Dark Avengers, got Winter Soldier, we got more Daredevil, and we've got Spider-Man. you know, kind of all up in that same area. And then, you know, other than Dark Avengers, which I didn't really read this year, I read all that, all the others, and I really enjoyed, for the most part, all those others. I mean, I loved Hickman's Fantastic Four and Future Foundation. Winter Soldier by Brubaker has been an excellent title. You know, Spider-Man up through probably about 696. Mm-hmm. I was really enjoying, but, you know, that was that. Now, title, I went with, I kind of biased myself, I think, towards what I'm liking now as opposed to maybe throughout the year. I mean,
Well, you've been paring back a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I had a pretty short list to pick from. You know, on Marvel books that I'm getting, you know, and it came down to like, I could have gone Daredevil or I could have gone Thor. And I went with Thor, because I like the art in that more. And it's a visual medium. But I mean, it was kind of a toss up. I mean, for me on title, it's Daredevil and Thor. If I probably did area under the curve for the entire year, I would probably need to go with Fantastic Four Future Foundation before the Marvel Now reboot.
I can see that.
So it's kind of like, you know, who do I go with there? You know, I'm kind of like waffling a little bit, you know, and Thor's maybe a little bit of speculation moving forward. You know, so I could maybe switch myself up there and go Fantastic Four Future Foundation for, you know, by Hickman, you know, for, you know, total what I got the most enjoyment out of across 2012.
I can see that. For me, I went with All New X-Men, and it's, again, kind of like you were saying with Thor God of Thunder, it's a new title, so it's got all the promise and hasn't had really the time to disappoint like some ongoings will inevitably do after, you know, some duration. And part of what I'm liking about the All-New X-Men is it goes back to, you know, if you can't recreate the glory days, let's time travel some characters from that period to now and see what happens. And it's a nice juxtaposition of where Marvel was, where Marvel is. And while it's a fairly slow-paced title, it's the Marvel Now title I'm finding most intriguing and engaging. Because a lot of the others just, I have some philosophical problems with the, let's take this character and get them out of the mainstream, you know, timeline, universe, and planet, put them elsewhere and see what happens. They're doing that just on too many characters simultaneously. So for us to have twice the original X-Men in some cases, is just kind of fun. And again, good juxtaposition of current status quo and where it all started. I think they're going to write themselves into a nasty corner, and I don't know how that one's going to resolve itself. But there are one or two other books that I am shocked to realize, wait, that's an ongoing? Avengers Arena is the one that still surprises me there. That seems like miniseries written all over it. Anyways, I went with All New X-Men.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, that was kind of like my Thor choice. I can understand, you know, because it's what's exciting you right now, right?
Yeah. What do people in the forum have to say?
On the title, a lot of people were going Daredevil. It's a bunch of Daredevil. There was Fantastic Four. There was Thor and Hawkeye. A lot of people liking Hawkeye by Fraction. Matt Fraction's writing that, and David Aja doing the art.
I think one of the smart things they're doing on Hawkeye is single-issue stories. Certain things are building between issues, but each one gives a certain amount of satisfaction having read just the one. And I think that was a very smart decision to make.
And I really like that title. I like the Hawkeye title a lot. It's one of my top, well, I mean, I only get like 7 or 8 Marvel titles, and it's one of them. So
you see, that's
it's
where
in my top 10 for Marvel.
I think we're coming at this from pretty different angles. Is you're getting a handful of books. I'm getting like all of them. So for me, it's kind of hard to remember all the different choices over the course of the year out of the 800 some, you know, issues I got.
Marvel was pretty easy for me. It's like I look at like what are the 8 or 10 titles that I've been getting over the year, and what do I like best out of that? So
now what's interesting is I went through the 5 out of 5s for the year for Marvel for the two of us. You had Winter Soldier number 1 and Thor God of Thunder number 3. I had none.
Interesting.
And, you know, I had quite a few 4 out of 5s. I think they've done some really good stuff here and there. But there are a few where it's like, they're not wowing me consistently. And part of that is they're inconsistent across certain titles. So certain things you're liking more than I am, it's because I'm thinking, well, that doesn't jive with things they've already set up or things they did in another book this week or stuff like that. So, I thought it was a so-so year for Marvel. I'm really hoping they kick things into high gear with the Marvel Now initiative, and that 2013 they're kind of able to re-energize their fan base.
Yeah, I see a lot of positive reaction of people trying out Marvel Now. And just like when DC relaunched with the New 52, there was a tremendous amount in those first few months of people trying out the different books. But I think it kind of tailed off after a certain amount of time. So we're still in that initial honeymoon period on Marvel Now, but to
their very much so, and will be for another few months.
But a lot of people are trying a lot of books, and a lot of people are saying, "Oh, I haven't read this for years. I'm really liking it," and that's great. That's what they were going out to do. What's really going to be, you know, kind of the proof on this is when we get here next year. Is it going to be, you know, how many people are sticking with those titles after a year, and how are they able to hold that up? And one comment that I will make that we talk about a number of times, and it kind of goes back to that, you know, rotating creative team kind of thing, is with Marvel's tendency to put out 18 issues a year on a lot of these books, you know, how is the rotating art team? Because the writer can write 18 issues, but, you know, the artist can't necessarily draw the 18 issues. Daredevil has done that very successfully, right? Picking a rotating team of artists who are both really good and have a similar enough style that it's not jarring, you know, going, you know, back and forth between the different arcs by the different writers. By the different artists, sorry. But, you know, on some of these other books, I kind of worry about how much is the what people loving about the book tied into a particular artist. And when they kind of blow through this, I think they've backlogged a few issues here coming into Marvel Now, you know, and they start doing the musical chairs on the art teams. How is that going to play with people? So we'll see.
Cool. Shall we move on to the others, the non-Marvel, non-DC, the oft forgotten, unfortunately?
The everyone else.
The everyone else category.
I have been sticking with the same writer that I've had for the last several years, I think, and that is Robert Kirkman. You know, what I like about Robert Kirkman is on Walking Dead, he continues, I mean, Walking Dead, he still pulls stuff out of somewhere where he does unexpected things. He's got me guessing. He, you know, keeps the excitement, you know, going. He's going for over 100 issues now.
Yeah.
You know, he's doing the TV show, and it's not just Walking Dead. He does Invincible. He's doing Super Dinosaur. You know, he's like, he's got his finger in so many different pies, and he's just keeping them coming, you know. And he's got, you know, of the indie guys, he's got definite stamina, and he entertains me. You know, Walking Dead is still a top of the stack read for me every time it comes out of the box. It is drifted down a little bit of late from the absolute very first number one thing I read, but that's because there's so many other things that have, you know, particularly Valiant, you know, coming along,
right?
That, you know, when I open a box, if there's Valiant books in there and Walking Dead, I'm going to read the Valiant stuff first, right?
Well, but you mentioned
that stuff is really good, but, you know.
You mentioned Super Dinosaur. What are you thinking of that book?
I it's not for me personally. I'm not a big fan of it, but I can appreciate that he's writing a book aimed at the kids. So, fair, I mean, enough. I give him credit for that. I've read it. I don't think it's bad, but it's kind of just not my cup of tea for me personally to read. But I applaud the fact that he's doing it.
That's fair. Well, and it shows some definite diversity from, you know, Walking Dead and
right.
Invincible and stuff. It shows he could do things that don't need quite the maiming and the goring and stuff
right.
that you get in some of his more violent books at times. I went with Nick Spencer on Morning Glories.
A great choice. great
doing job. Some phenomenal work. At some point, I still need to go back through and reread that book because I know there's a layer of it I haven't fully gotten. But even so, I feel that the story I am getting out of it, the more surface level stuff, is still very enjoyable, very good. So I think Spencer's doing great work.
And I can absolutely see that. That is a top great book. I mean, there's so many. I had the hardest time picking in the indie realm.
Yeah.
I read so many different indie books, and I love so many different indie books. It's just, man, what do I pick? You know, and it's just like, you know, I ended up just saying, okay, I'm going to go with this one. But, you know, there's, and when I look at what a lot of people, other people have picked, I can say, yeah, okay. You know, and it's like we got Fred Van Lente writing Archer and Armstrong. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can see that.
I can see that.
That's a great book. You got Dysart, right, doing Harbinger. Yeah. Okay. I can see that. You got Jonathan Hickman doing Manhattan Projects. Yeah. That's a great book. You got a bunch of people pick Brian K. Vaughan for Saga. Some other, you know, there's other pick for Kirkman and Garth Ennis for wrapping up The Boys. And he's done a lot of other stuff this year too, but you know, he wrapped up The Boys this year. So, I mean, a lot of great picks.
Cool.
Who'd you pick on art?
I had to go with Nate Simpson for non-player number two. No, wait, that still hasn't even been solicited yet. Can't go with that. Damn.
Burn. Can't let that Nate Simpson alone. Just because it's been a year and a half since.
I'm sorry, I had to point that one out. I mean, I get in this quadrant of, you know, the creator own the indie books that these guys have to have day jobs. They got to have money coming in. It's a labor of love as much as anything else. It just kind of annoys me when you get something that really was beautiful to never have another issue ever come out. And at this point, it's been long enough that if they solicit a number two, that's almost self-defeating. But that we'll talk about that if and when non-player number two ever gets solicited. I'm going to go with Joe Esima for Morning Glories and stuff. Again, that's a very well-done book. It's one that I always enjoy, always kind of gets to the top of my stack when it comes out. Again, on the other section here with everything but Marvel and DC, it's such a wide open field. There's so many great artists doing so many wonderful books. I probably could have picked the art teams on half a dozen other titles. You know, Archer and Armstrong, Bloodshot. I'm trying to think of other ones that really kind of leap to mind.
Well, I can give you some off the forum. We'll,
yeah, I mean, there's
there's a lot. Terry Moore.
Terry Moore.
On Rachel Rising.
Pitch
Ryan,
on
Ryan Ottley.
America's Got Powers, I thought was great too, yeah.
We have Derek Robertson from The Boys, Eric Powell from The Goon, Fiona Staples from Saga, Brandon Graham doing Prophet. You know, there's so many great artists doing stuff out in the indie realm that this is very, very difficult to narrow down to one because I love a lot of different artists. Now, for me, I picked Axel Medellin doing Elephant Men.
I can totally understand that.
He has done some great arcs on Elephant Men, and I love his art. What he does on that book is fabulous. What, you know, pairing up with Richard Starkings on that book, that is a phenomenal book. Can't recommend that one highly enough for people who have never read it. And, you know, picking up those giant collected editions is a great way to read that book too. And Richard keeps those things in print and has them available at pretty much every convention you go to. He's there smiling, drawing free sketches for people, handing out free sample copies of the book to people and selling the collections. And, you know, I wish he would sell more copies of this than he's selling because it deserves a much wider audience than people are giving this book credit. You know, it's a great book. I love it.
I would agree with all that, yeah.
And that plays into my choice for character team in the indie world because on that one I picked the Elephant Men crew of Hip Flask, Ebony Hyde, Vanity Case, Mickey, Obadiah Horn, Sahara, all of those characters. I just love that world and the different characters that he's brought to life there.
It's a good sci-fi slash, I don't want to say pulp noir, but, you know, gumshoe kind of a a mix in terms of genres and stuff.
Yeah, it crosses so many different genres, right? You got action, you got mystery, you got sci-fi, just lots of stuff there.
It reminds me of kind of the 40s era kind of gumshoe movies at times, the 50s era sci-fi in a few ways, with a modern sensibility and stuff. It's certainly a book that I think more people should be checking out. So certainly not one I would have thought about for character and team, but I can totally understand it. For me, there was no question who I had to pick here. It was hands down the New Crusaders from Archie Comics. This is a fun superhero team. It's a very good all-ages superhero title. It's reminds me of kind of the 80s storytelling mentality. It's got, again, it's very approachable, very understandable. It's got decent amount of story. This is stuff they're originally doing digitally and then collecting into issues, and then they're going to collect that into a trade. So since they're doing it digitally in, you know, I don't know, 8-10 page chunks, each 8 to 10 pages have to kind of stand alone and move the story along. So over the course of an issue where you get like 4 of those or whatever, it's moving at a pretty good clip. There's a lot of story in there. And these are the Red Circle characters of Steel Sterling, The Fly, The Web, Jaguar, I'm blanking on some of the other names. But the ones we've seen as Impact, as Red Circle through DC and stuff, obviously they're all Archie characters going back home now. It's got an art style reminiscent of Mike Parabek and stuff back from the old days of the Batman Adventures, so nice, clean, simple, animated kind of a story and visual style, which really works. I'm really hoping that Archie is able to run with these characters for the long haul and keep going with them, because I think they're doing some great stuff. And I think this is an excellent on-ramp book for new readers, young and old, into the superhero books that, you know, it's like, okay, you like this, now you can kind of move towards, you know, a Justice League or an X-Men or Avengers. But you can start with a book where the heroes are actually, I don't know, fighting crime and villainy and stuff, and not just each other. So I'm loving the team.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. From the forum, we've got a couple of choices of Atomic Robo, who is a great character.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Reed Gunther, Ninjak, Shadow Man, The Boys, and the crew of the Capital from the Massive. That one was kind of interesting, but I could see that. I love those characters in the Massive also. That's coming out from Dark Horse. That is a great series, kind of environmental. But it's one of the, it's not one that I can say everyone will like this, because I think it's a book that some people will love and some people will not.
Mm-hmm.
Now on our last category here of favorite title, what did you go with?
I went with Archer and Armstrong. Storyline.
Great title, great story.
I'm really enjoying what they're doing there. I think they've revitalized those characters, retooled them in subtle ways and not so subtle ways in one or two ways. It's a fun pairing, and I'm really happy to see that that Valiant has kind of pulled out all the stops. They've got solid creative teams on all their books. I thought about going with, you know, maybe EXO, maybe Bloodshot, but Archer and Armstrong, to me, is the one I got to go with. It's nice, fun, almost lighthearted sensibility at times while still telling a very, you know, good story.
Uh-huh. And I went the other side of that equation with Harbinger. You know, that's my favorite title right now from, and it was Archer and Armstrong, but, you know, with issue 6, it flipped over to Harbinger, and I really love that book. That's probably my number one comic overall of all comics right now.
Cool.
We got a bunch of people pick Saga. We got Walking Dead, Rachel Rising, The Boys, and we got a Popeye from IDW, which was very interesting to see, the new one, the Roger Langridge one.
Interesting, yeah.
So did you have a favorite web comic this year?
I really don't read many web comics, so it kind of came down to the two that I keep pinned in my my browser and check when they have new ones out. And this time I went with XKCD.com. That's more of a comic strip than comic book kind of a web comic. And it comes out every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and I enjoy it. It's routinely good. There are a couple that I think are just brilliant. The other one that was in the running was The Gutters. They used to do Monday, Wednesday, Friday. They cut back to just Wednesdays a little while ago. And I still enjoy that a lot, but sometimes it's just enough hit or miss that when you only get one a week, it's possible for it to miss, you know, a week or two in a row or whatever. So again, XKCD is what I went with. But again, I tend not to read web comics.
Yeah, there's very few. Didn't have a whole lot of people even picking one of those for on the web. We got Penny Arcade, World's Strongest Mailman, and Menage a Three, which other than Penny Arcade, I've never read the other two. Penny Arcade is always fun. I like that one. For me, I have stuck with Battle Pug by Mike Norton.
Now, I got the hardcover of that, and I thought it was brilliant. Yeah. Norton's doing some great work on that. I just don't tend to read the webcomic version of it.
He does a page a week of it, and it's just, you know, I think he does a great job on it.
Interesting, nobody mentioned PvP Online. I mean, is that even still happening? I'm assuming it is. I frankly was getting that in the Dead Tree edition, so when that stopped, I stopped following it.
Yeah.
I mean, I like it. I just, again, I'm not in the habit of for the most part, doing the daily web stuff. So what did you have for a favorite creator-owned project by a solo creator?
That one I had to go with Rachel Rising by Terry Moore.
I can totally see that. Terry Moore is doing just a great job and has such a clear, cohesive vision of the stories he wants to tell and stuff.
Yeah, that is a top 10 book for me overall. You know, out of all the comics I read, that's in my top 10. So that had to go. And I, in the past, have gone Usagi Yojimbo, but it's been a while since that came out. Most of the year it's been out. Well, Stan works on 47 Ronin, so left the door open for Rachel.
For me, hands down winner, Loving Capes, Tom Zoller.
Great choice.
Tom Zoller is just knocking it out of the park. Every issue he's ever done of Loving Capes. You know, both the writing, the art, the pacing, the storytelling, he's just phenomenal. What did people in the forum have?
Not everyone picked this category. What I was very interested in is that two different people picked Westward by Ken Kreckler, which I've read and is a very good book. And then we had a choice of Epic Kill by Raph Yenko. Mm-hmm. That's coming out from Image. And we got a Power Principle by Alan White, which is a came out through a Kickstarter, and I've read that also. So actually, I've read all those books that have been picked by people for creator-owned of the year, and they're all good choices.
Interesting. Now, out of our 5 out of 5s for this section, I had picked, over the course of the Weekly Comic Spotlight for the year, Danger Club number 1, America's Got Powers number 1, Mind the Gap number 1, Star Trek 11, Love and Capes, What You Expect, number 1, Archer and Armstrong, number 1. You'd give him 5 out of 5s to Suburbia, number 1, Danger Club, number 1, Mind the Gap, number 1, Morning Glories, 20, and Archer and Armstrong, number 1. So I think we both had more 5 out of 5s in the other section. No, I guess you had more in DC, actually, my mistake. But still, the other section had a certain run for its money there. I gave more 5 out of 5s to the other section than I gave to Marvel and DC combined. So there's a lot of fun stuff, a lot of interesting stuff happening in this area. So it really comes down to overall favorite publisher of the year. And, I mean, I haven't really skimmed through the whole forum thread, but I'm expecting a clear trend in this area. For me, hands down, Valiant. They did a great job with how they relaunched. I think first issue of EXO was a little bit of a slow burn. But really, that was the only one that I think was a bit of a slow burn. And really, once things kicked into gear, they've been keeping up the quality on the writing, the story, the production values, the whole nine yards. If you're going to start a publishing company or restart a publishing brand or whatever, they've really been doing it right.
Yeah, that was mine also. Valiant is my hands-down favorite publisher. I think 3 of my top 10 books are from Valiant, which is, given that they only publish 5 books,
yeah,
you know, that is saying a lot, right? It's like I'm getting right now about 110 books a month as of my last order, and 3 of the top 10 are from Valiant.
Mm-hmm.
They're excellent, excellent stuff that they're putting out. And I was surprised that they didn't have as much of a runaway on the forum as I thought that they would.
Really?
There were people that picked Valiant, but as many people picked Image as picked Valiant. And then there were DC, Dark Horse, and IDW picks also.
I can see that.
So all good publishers. I think it's because I didn't have the thing up very long. I was very surprised I didn't see a Marvel.
Yeah, again, the thread only went up a few days ago. So I think if it had been up throughout the course of the year, we would have seen better representation from earlier in the year. Certainly a lot more love for Marvel at various times. But it just came down to who had checked the forum in the last couple of days.
Yeah.
As to what they popped in. So, I mean, overall, it was a good year. I think really the main movers and shakers, for the most part, were titles kind of outside of Marvel and DC. You know, seeing a lot of what Image has been doing, certainly Valiant made a big splash. It's going to be a lot of fun to see kind of what happens going into the new year. Marvel starting off in a much stronger sales position than it had last year. But, you know, they've also got a lot of very, you know, new titles, so they don't have quite the sticking power necessarily with the readers, so we'll see how long that sales traction does or does not last. So, any other kind of closing thoughts?
You know, to me, for this year, one of the biggest positive things I saw was the relaunch of Valiant, and it goes with, you know, just how they were able to do it the right way. You know, they were successful. They didn't go too fast, too quickly. And, you know, we saw kind of an abortive attempt to relaunch Atlas. We saw, you know, kind of a really mishandled attempt to revitalize cross-gen from Marvel. And Valiant, I think, learned from some of those things. And they came back with a strength and quality that was pleasantly surprising, you know, for a new publisher launch. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how they grow in 2013.
Yeah, same here. I really hope they become a strong, viable publisher, you know, along the level of, you know, Boom, Dynamite, Image, IDW, and Dark Horse. Having another strong player in that area is just good for everybody.
Yeah, and, you know, of the other kind of second-tier kind of publishers there, the interesting thing there, well, Image kind of stands aside, right? So Image is a very different publishing model in that most of the things they put out are really creator-owned things that they're facilitating getting published, right? So the biggest knock against them from a lot of people is, you know, like the inconsistency of how frequently stuff comes out. You know, we both gave Danger Club, number one, a 5 out of 5, right? But then how many issues of Danger Club came out?
6, you know? And the 7th has been, I think, re-solicited a time or two.
Yeah. So, you know, that's the kind of thing where that hurts some of these series that, you know, they come out or they're a mini series, you know? So you get 4 issues, you get 6 issues, and then, you
like
know.
The 3 out of 6 for War Heroes.
Yeah.
Or the 1 out of who knows how many for non-player.
So the advantage to Morning Glories and Mind the Gap also is that they actually come out. You know, you're getting those books. And that's, you know, they kind of, you know, and Saga also to some extent. I mean, there's some of those Image books, they really stand out. But Image is a very different publishing model than some of the other ones. And the other ones, when you look at Dark Horse and IDW and Dynamite and, you know, these, they've got so many licensed properties that they are, you know, filling out their publishing schedule with that, you know, when you look at Valiant, you know, they've got this cohesive Valiant universe. You don't really, that's one of the things that I like about them. You know, they're telling a universe, you know, they're publishing a universe.
Well, and that's something that's going to be interesting with Dark Horse because Disney has announced that the license for Star Wars is going to Marvel. So once it expires, and I believe that happens in 2013, I don't know if it's beginning, middle, or end or when, that's, you know, a huge licensing property that Dark Horse has had for like 20 years going away.
Which is not surprising, you know, because, you know, as soon as, you know, you heard that Disney bought Star Wars, you know, that was – pretty much what everybody said. Oh, well, how long is it going to be before Disney gives the Star Wars license to Marvel? And it wasn't that long at all.
Yeah, but it's interesting because the ducks and stuff left Boom. I'm not really seeing them coming out of Marvel, though, are they?
Marvel is not doing that much with them, but I don't know. You know, it seems like they would start doing Star Wars comics, but
yeah, would have thought there would have been an Uncle Scrooge one, though. You know what I mean?
It's too bad because they're just starting up that new Star Wars book by Brian Wood.
Yeah,
that the first issue's not even out yet, and so it's like the days are numbered on that one before you know the license expires, and that one's going to have to end. It would be good if Marvel could just continue that title seamlessly and take the same creative teams, you know, get like Jan Dursema and a lot of these other people that have been doing the Star Wars books for Dark Horse and just transition them over and do them. But, you know,
I think Marvel has an opportunity here to start up a new imprint, get the right editor, whoever that may be, for their licensed stuff. I mean, whoever's doing the favorite authors or whatever section, expand that to where there's a section for the Disney characters, the ducks and stuff, the Star Wars characters, and then whichever other stuff kind of lands, you know, what Pixar maybe and stuff like that, and actually make that a very solid, strong imprint for Marvel. I think they've got an opportunity there. I just don't know that in recent years or decades they've really done well with licensed properties for the most part. We'll see how that pans out.
Yep. But it'll be an interesting, you know, every year we say 2013 will be an interesting year for comics.
Oh, it usually is. It's sometimes interesting in very different ways. You know, at this point, last year, it's, you know, will the new 52, you know, continue to be a success? What will Marvel do in response? Now we've seen what Marvel's starting to do. The question is, will that be a success? You know, how is the shakeout of the licensing going to happen? Are publishers going to keep the prices where they're at? I mean, DC's held the line at $2.99 for a surprisingly long time. Sooner or later, that's got to move. I think every year has a lot of potential for comics, both good and bad. It's always fun to see where it goes. Anything else, or does that pretty much do it?
Does it for me.
Cool.
Happy New Year to everybody, and hopefully everyone listening will have a healthy, happy, and prosperous 2013.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.